back in the early days writing articles and, you know, posting online, speaking about what is cyber insurance, what does it cover. I would literally get, you know, nasty emails from people or comments on posts saying, stop talking about this. You should be stop talking about insurance. It's a waste of money. They should be spending money on controls. And so I don't hear that as much anymore, but there's so many problems with that, you know, that mindset.
Do you want to hear about the latest developments in the cyber market and learn best practices and thought leadership from cyber insurance and security experts? We talk all things cyber insurance industry, international growth, cyber claims, and more. Welcome to the Cyber Insurance Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Hess. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and good morning in the States. Judy Selby, pleasure to have you on.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me. It's really a pleasure.
It's definitely mine. I will. I like to sort of open these up with some introductory questions, kind of ask you a bit about yourself, and then we'll jump into some of your thoughts on various aspects of cyber. So just to sort of kick things off, could you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Judy Selby. I'm a partner at Kennedy's in the New York office. Kennedy's is a global law firm, and I'm a member of our global cyber and privacy team. I've been practicing law, I almost hate to say it, over three decades now, and have been focused pretty much exclusively on cyber coverage for maybe 12 years or so.
You know, pretty U.S. focused, right? Do you do much international work?
Yeah, you know, I work for insurance companies. And so, you know, I think the bulk of, you know, of my client base is in the U.S., but I do work for London insurers as well.
Okay, great. Just in terms of the size of clients, what would you say you typically see?
Everything, you know, from the biggest global insurers to, you know, somebody who's brand new to the market and, you know, needs help with policy wordings, you know, everything from and everything in between.
Okay, great. Last question I'd like to ask just about your company. What would you say your strength is when it comes to cyber?
Well, I think our biggest strength is that we are, you know, a global law firm with an insurance industry focus. And in cyber, you know, with regard to our cyber capabilities, particularly on the IR side, we like to say the sun never sets on Kennedy's, you know, like the British Empire. We have a really good, I'm not on the IR side, but I know how it works. And so we always have people available when the, as you know better than I do, when that incident comes in, all hours of the day or night, it's always picked up right away. And having that insurance company focus is globally is really key and helps us to serve our clients really well.
Okay, great. Yeah, it is. It's interesting. Cool. All right. Well, let's. I'd like to jump into the sort of thought leadership questions and get your views on various things. I think, you know, the first one I wanted to jump into was, you know, I kind of sit between the cybersecurity world and the cyber insurance world. Like I sort of consider myself a cyber insurance person, really, as much as anything. You know, that's really where my interest lies. Rather than being a digital forensics expert or cybersecurity expert, I'm, like I said, I'm kind of in the middle. And so I see you know, news articles, comms, you know, I have conversations with people in both areas, you know, and one of the things that I see a lot of is the belief of cybersecurity people that insurance is kind of their enemy a little bit, that the insurance is there taking their budget, preventing them from investing in security. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that I do agree. I don't know if that's as pronounced now as it used to be. When I was, you know, back in the early days writing articles and, you know, posting online, speaking about what is cyber insurance, what does it cover, I would literally get, you know, nasty emails from people or comments on posts saying, stop talking about this. You should be stop talking about insurance. It's a waste of money. They should be spending money on controls. Right. And so I don't hear that as much anymore. But, I mean, there's so many problems with that, you know, that mindset.
Right.
First of all, you know, number one is the assumption that no matter how much, you know, if you put money towards your controls, you will never have an incident, which, mm-hmm. you know, we all know that's not true. And just like in any other risk transfer situation, if you look at property insurance, for example, you know, you still have your sprinkler system, you still have your fire alarms, you still have your fire extinguishers, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But you still buy your property insurance. And so you just can't control all those risks. And the other fundamental problem with that mindset is cybersecurity, you know, coverage for cybersecurity risks is only one part of cyber insurance. You know, mm-hmm. there's the liability coverage, you know, for the lawsuits. There's the privacy coverage, which is so important now. We're seeing more and more and more media coverage, tech E&O coverage, all of these mm-hmm. things. So that mindset and that argument completely ignores all of that. And so I'm glad, at least in my experience, I'm not sure what you're seeing, Anthony, but I'm glad in my experience, mm-hmm. I don't hear that as much as I used to.
Yeah, I think it's definitely more neutral, perhaps, you know, and I think my view is probably more, you know, European focused, just from living here in the UK. In terms of people I'm talking with, typically are, you know, if they're friends of mine and they work in, you know, a large bank or they work in a, you know, cybersecurity consultancy, it's perhaps a slightly different group of people that we're engaging with, maybe a little bit less developed than the US. But I do think, you know, it's something that people kind of understand is one of the tools they can use now, you know, and it's not thought of as the enemy of cybersecurity. It's like, okay, this is another tool kind of, you know, that we can use.
That's right. It's not a substitute. Like, it's not an either or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like your point on the privacy response and the privacy coverage is really good. I think, you know, we went through this period where, you know, it's so strange, you know, you go back 7-8 years ago and I don't think insurance led to this by any means. I think very much so that, you know, not at all, but you started to see broader coverage, more, less focus on data breach, especially as it became international, because the sort of international scene, even post GDPR or NDB in Australia or, you know, PIPA does in Canada, like you have all these data breach laws kind of all over the world. Even with that, the rise of ransomware at the same time, you had the coverage covering more of ransomware of supply chain. So like contingent business interruption, that sort of thing. Even with all of, you know, even with the ransomware attacks kind of led everybody to kind of forgetting about the privacy side of it. Even though all those laws were coming, it was because it wasn't really where people were getting hit. And now, you know, it's kind of interesting to see it. Okay, we have ransomware. Ransomware's happening. It's, you know, okay, maybe it's growing. You know, maybe it's, you know, similar as before. You know, I think the most, what I believe is that it, and obviously this is from reading various things that are published, is that the impact is less because people are more prepared, but the volume's very high. You know, so you still have ransomware still happening. But you kind of now with the US, especially all the data breach changes, all the privacy law changes and things coming up in Illinois, California, whatever. It's kind of swinging back, I guess, is my point. I kind of went on a bit there, but I think the history is interesting and like people have forgotten, especially on, you know, if you're not a privacy expert, people forget. They do forget. It's true.
And the really interesting thing is, I think initially, you know, back in those early days, you were talking about, you know, when GDPR mm-hmm. was just, you know, coming on, and they were talking about it prior to, you know, the enactment in 2018. Right. I think people kind of had an assumption that the privacy coverage would grow out of a cybersecurity incident, you know, a data mm-hmm. breach or some type of security event. But what we're really seeing now is privacy claims coming into insurers where the underlying issues are really business decisions that the company is making about collecting and using and selling data. And now with these new requirements coming in from the SEC, NYDFS for covered entities there, business judgments, you know, as to materiality and, you know, of an incident. And so, you know, insurers need to look at those types of requirements and say, you know, are we really in the business of insuring that, you know, filing an 8K with the SEC, you know, which is really a notification to shareholders of an incident that may have a material impact on the business and the share valuation, to me at least, and I'm not a securities lawyer, is very different from sending out a notification to an individual that their PII or PHI was compromised in an incident.
Yeah.
And so the insurers need to think, is this something that we want to take on the first party side, you know, just getting those filings made? And, you know, what does that mean on the third party side? You know, if there are lawsuits arising out of the, you know, the appropriateness of any type of 8K filing, you know, was it misleading? Or, you know, was it fraudulent? Was it on time? You know, all these issues that securities lawyers and D&O insurers deal with all the time. And so it creates issues as to, you know, do cyber insurers want to pick that up? And, you know, does their wordings, they should be looking at their wordings now to see, you know, how it may shake out. Do they want to cover that? Do they not want to cover it? Make sure the wording support whatever decision they make. And then the brokers need to look at, you know, well, if it's not covered under cyber, let's look at the D&O coverage, you know, but is there a cyber exclusion there? Is a privacy exclusion there? So there could create, there could be a coverage gap there for people to think about. But this concept now, like putting aside those regulatory filing issues, but this concept now of covering business decisions, I don't know that people were really thinking about that. So if a regulator looks at your privacy policy online and says, you know what, we think this is a little unclear, you should have more detail here, and you probably have too much detail in this section of your privacy policy, or it's too hard to find the link to your privacy policy on your website. You know, these are really tricky exposures on the underwriting side, you know, for underwriters to look at and say, how do we control for this? You know, how do we evaluate this? How do we price for this? And then, you know, you have the potential for fines. You have the potential for, in the U.S. particularly, you know, the class action litigation. You know, if you say you do something on your website or in your privacy policy, you know, like we never sell your data, and you actually are selling the data, you know, and then along comes the FTC or somebody, and then you'll see like the copycat. If the FTC's investigation or consent judgment goes public, then you'll see the copycat lawsuits come in. And so these are issues that I talk to my clients about.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know, Anthony, that people saw this coming back when, you know, the regulatory coverage was expanded back in like 2017 with the expectation of, you know, GDPR and other laws coming on.
Yeah, I do think there was a lot of focus, and always is a lot of, up until very recently, a lot of focus on the cyber attack side of everything, rather than everything else that's also kind of cyber data privacy, and it's covered under the policy, or, you know, people expect that's covered under the policy. So yeah, it's interesting because I think the cyber side's fairly well known, the cyber incident side's fairly well known, the attacks, and I think governments and whatnot tend to be somewhat I think understanding of crime victims, you know, which these companies are, you know, unless they've done something pretty egregious, you know, usually a cyber attack isn't going to lead to, you know, the horrific outcomes, but, you know, certainly misuse of data or being dishonest about how they're using the data.
I think that's right. I think people are realizing, I remember back when the Target breach, whenever that was, 2014.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, if because everybody was hanging Target out to dry, and you know, there were issues apparently reported in the press that maybe they you know, could have done things differently. But I remember thinking to myself, if a bunch of criminals charged into a store and stole from them, you know, we would have a very different mindset about, you know, their culpability in that.
Right.
But it's interesting. I'm glad that you're seeing that. That there is a recognition, and this kind of goes back to our earlier point, that no matter what you do, you know, in terms of controls and processes, you know, there's still a risk of attack. And especially with 0 days, which raise all kinds of interesting issues on the cyber insurance side. You know, because often I should say, you know, we're dealing with situations like the MOVEit incident, where, you know, it's the insurer's vendor or the vendor of the vendor is impacted by the incident, but they're holding the insured's data. And so how is that resolved when the lawsuits start coming in and for notification and all those types of things? So very, very interesting times now because of our interconnectedness digitally and our dependence on each other and, you know, our reliance on other entities to hold our data and do things with our data, just creating very interesting issues on the coverage side.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I guess just thinking about coverage, thinking about things that, you know, we talk about privacy response or the broad response to an insurance policy, talking about different kinds of wordings. Do you think people really understand their insurance company or, excuse me, insurance policy? Do companies understand their insurance policy? Do they read them? Do they understand all the conditions? Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes, but probably not. I don't know too many people who enjoy reading an insurance policy, unless you're a geek like me. But it's really important. That they do that, particularly with cyber, I would say, because cyber is a really complex policy. I don't know of any other coverage on the market, any other line that's like it, because you have your first party coverage and the regulatory coverage. And the first party coverage, you can have 10, 11, 12 insuring agreements there, all different coverages. Then you move on to like the regulatory coverage and then the liability coverage and the tech E&O coverage and media coverage. And, you know, it's really important to, you know, we've been saying this for so long, but it's so important to keep in mind, no two policies are the same. You know, there's this famous line everybody uses, if you've seen one cyber insurance policy, you've seen one cyber insurance policy. And so it's really, really important for insureds, hopefully they have a good broker they can work with, to, you know, if they can't understand every word of the policy, understand and operationalize their requirements under the policy. For example, if you have a policy that requires the insurance company's consent before you do anything, before you pay anything, if you have a policy that requires the use of approved vendors or panel counsel, forensic vendors, et cetera. You need to know that. But you need to know that before you have the incident, you know, so it's really important when you get that policy, work with the broker, work with the insurer and understand what triggers a notice obligation under the policy. Whose knowledge of an incident is really important, you know, within the company that would trigger the notice obligation? Do we have prior consent requirements? Do we have panel requirements. Mm-hmm. Who's on these panels? You know, if I really want to work with Anthony and he's not on the panel, you know, I can talk to the underwriter mm-hmm. before the policy is issued and have you added to, you know, add by endorsement to the policy so that I can use you. So I'm not scrambling when we have an incident. So those types of things are really key. And unfortunately, you know, where things can go awry is when these things are not kept in mind. And, you know, an insured is, you know, has an incident and everybody's in a panic and they just kind of are like, you know, I always use this example, you know, my brother-in-law knows something about computers. Let's bring him in, you know, my neighbor is a lawyer. Let's ask him and bring him in. And you're like, yeah, he's a real estate lawyer, but, but, you know, I always emphasize this importance of communication and this collaborative nature that really should begin at least when the policy is being purchased, but ideally before an incident and actually throughout the incident. You know, sometimes we'll see incidents that are not handled well. And, you know, from my perspective as coverage counsel for the insurance company, I see limits being wasted and just burned on things that just don't seem to be the best use of those insurance dollars. And it's really unfortunate when you see situations like this. And I think so many of those situations can be avoided by doing exactly what you said, you know, read the policy, understand what the requirements are, and actually operationalize that. Make that part of your incident response plan so that things don't fall through the cracks. That's really my advice on that. Another thing for brokers to keep in mind, and I'm sure they do, or the good ones do, is make sure the cyber policy dovetails well with the other coverages on, you know, in the insurance portfolio. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the examples that we've already talked about is, you know, are these claims that may implicate cyber and D&O coverage. More and more we're seeing claims come in that can implicate different coverages, not just cyber. So you'll have something come in that can be both a tech E&O claim and a cyber insurance claim or a crime insurance claim or a property insurance claim, depending on, you know, coverages, you know, extensions to the property insurance policy. So I think it's important to take a step back before you have an incident and look at these things globally. And I know it's easier said than done, but you know, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to work with a good broker who really understands cyber, really understands the exposures, which are growing now, are growing now all the time.
Right. Yeah. And so it's I guess we've kind of talked about different pieces of it as we've been going along. There is a comprehensive response that you need to build that includes all of these pieces, and you do it working with a broker. And then in a big enough company, you're going to, you know, do a lot of things internally and hopefully the reduced tension between cyber insurance and cybersecurity, like you pull in the CISO, pull in that team, you know, the internal response team, all these kinds of things and be somewhat ready if and when something happens.
I think that's right. And you know, that circle now is getting broader and broader of the people who are impacted by the risks that can trigger coverage under a cyber policy. You know, we've seen this really, really clearly with all the tracking lawsuits that have come in over the past year or so. You know, some of my clients are just inundated with these lawsuits that are coming in that implicate completely different issues than we've seen before, both on the first party and the third party side. So now it's what are our marketing people doing? Are there tracking codes on our websites on each web page, you know, for example? And I think that circle you described of bringing people in more and more will have to include, you know, the marketing people or whatever their designation is in their company.
Yeah.
Because the underwriters now are starting to ask those questions, you know, do you have coding, you know, for technology tracking? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that circle has always included, potentially included outside vendors. You know, if you use, you know, an outside security vendor, you know, for smaller businesses in particular, but now you may need to pull in, you know, some vendor that's managing your websites or something like that. But to deal with these types of exposures. So it's always changing. And that's why it's so important. And you and lots of people like to make fun of me because I get up really early every morning and I deserve it. But in any event, you know, one of the first things I do in the morning is start, you know, researching what's going on out there, you know, what's new and coming on cybersecurity and in privacy, on the regulatory side, what new laws, what new regs are coming. Mm-hmm. And, you know, another really important thing to think about is, you know, cyber is the modifier. You know, these are insurance policies that we have to keep in mind. And so all of the law, the case law, all of the regulations around claims handling, you know, in the U.S. at least, all the case law on how insurance policies are interpreted and what courts will do with policy language, all of that is relevant to cyber insurance. Mm-hmm. People, I don't know why people think they're like in a whole different universe. They're really not. So, you know, it's really important, I think, for people like me to still be really current on what's going on in insurance law. And we're seeing now more and more as the market is maturing, you know, on the cyber insurance market is maturing, the claims are getting, you know, more diverse and the policy language is often being tested for the first time. The exposures are so different. We're seeing more and more of these traditional, I guess I'd call them, type of insurance legal issues become more important, like other insurance. You know, we mentioned about different coverages may be triggered by an event, or because so many parties can be involved in a single event, you know, like vendors and vendors of vendors, mm-hmm. other insurance, you know, coverage issue to the vendor, can that protect the insured? As the underwriting tightened up over, you know, the past couple of years, particularly with regard to ransom events, questions around, you know, misrepresentation or even rescission of an insurance policy due to material misrepresentations or omissions in an insurance application. Mm-hmm. So these really, you know, hardcore insurance issues, you know, policy agnostic insurance issues are becoming more and more important in the cyber context now as well.
Okay. So I guess, I guess other than, you know, what we've just talked about in terms of the shifts you just mentioned, what kind of other things are you seeing that's sort of new and different?
Yeah, I think I mentioned the biggest thing, and it's not particularly all that new, but it's more common. The claims arising out of the business practices in terms of, you know, collecting, selling, using data and like kind of the workflows that companies are using in that regard, particularly big companies, seeing lots of exposure that can trigger both cyber and tech E&O coverage. So if you're putting out a technology product or providing technology services that mm-hmm. are somehow implicated in, you know, alleged wrongful collection or wrongful use of data, seeing a lot more claims for those types of situations now that are really tricky. And on the tracking cases, I think we use that term very broadly. And it's important to keep in mind it's so much more than Metapixel. mm-hmm. so much more than that. The plaintiff's bar is very creative and coming up with lots of theories under you know, different laws that have been in place sometimes for decades and decades. And all of this, by the way, this is a really important issue for me that I always like to highlight, is the impact that it has on the claims team and on the underwriting teams. If you look at the claims team, you know, for so many years, and you know this better than I do, with that focus on these first party events, you know, the breach and then the ransom event, you know, the a lot of burden on the IR claim, on the claims team, to deal with these incidents to, you know, for this particular insured in this particular part of the country, who's the best vendor, which is the best law firm for them? How much should all these things cost? What's covered, what's not covered? And then we have all these issues with BI and bringing in forensic accountants and figuring out what a BI claim is and dealing with extra expense and regulatory issues, third-party liability. And now we're adding a whole different, you know, type of situation on where with these tracking claims where you, there's a whole new set of vendors you have to bring in on the first-party side to see what the insured is doing on their web pages. Are they really collecting the data that the plaintiffs say they are, things of that nature? And then on the liability side, these issues around, you know, what's the value of these claims if they survive a motion to dismiss and you're in settlement talks, how should these claims be valued? Is there any correlation to, you know, known values for certain types of data breach claims? You know, maybe not. We're seeing the same thing now with the vendor-of-vendor type of incidents where, you know, the insured is sued because their vendor had like a MOVEit incident, for example. Mm-hmm. And the lawsuit comes in against the insured, the policyholder, and it's all based around, you know, boilerplate allegations that the insured's network wasn't secure, completely irrelevant, because what we're really talking about is, you know, the insurer's retention of somebody else and, you know, this kind of the supervision and vetting of vendors versus, you know, the insured suffering an incident themselves. And so the claims team now is looking at, they have to look at these types of issues and how do you value and defend against these types of claims? So these are kind of the new things we're seeing now that are super interesting, but are adding to the long list of issues that the cyber claims team and the cyber underwriters have to deal with.
There's a couple of questions I kind of want to follow with that. So the first one is kind of considering all these things, where have you really seen it go wrong?
The two matters always come to mind where I've seen situations go wrong. Both times the insureds, I assume, did not read their policy in advance. In one matter, the insured had an incident and reported it, but to their primary, and just kind of then disappeared, went out and hired almost 20 different vendors, including a whole bunch of law firms. And a lot of vendors paid a very large ransom. Policy had consent requirements in the insuring agreements, and the costs were like just crazy across the board, you know, bringing in one law firm for, you know, 2 weeks, then bringing in another law firm. And so that was kind of a bad situation. Another situation I saw was where the insured went off panel with the consent of the insurer and brought in a law firm that was doing tons and tons of page by page document review for notification purposes in-house in the law firm, for, you know, right, including senior lawyers, big team of lawyers, billing 10, 14 hours a day, reviewing documents for notification purposes. And, you know, on the insurance company side, you know, we just saw those limits just being wasted. So those are probably the worst situations I've seen.
Yeah, that's that makes sense. So here's the other part of that question. You know, you were talking about The additional requirements on claims teams, how it's, you know, and the underwriters and how it's getting harder. I guess I'll focus on the claim side, but if you want to answer for the underwriting side, you know, either one's fine. I always like to hear more on the claim side. But what would you say, like, if you could imagine a situation where it's going to go really wrong, or where do you think these teams really should be focused on? Like, what should they be worried about in terms of where things might go wrong?
I guess the biggest red flag at the outset is an insured that's not communicative, an insured that's not responding to requests for information. That's probably a red flag that things may be going south there. And, you know, communication is really, really key.
Okay, so I guess I'll shift gears a little bit. What would you say your top three challenges are?
I would say top three challenges. Number one challenge is staying current.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody asked me what my job is, you know, I it's kind of to describe my job. I say it's to make my clients' life easier. And so I feel like the way to do that is to stay really current and try to see around the corner what's coming. And so I'll hear, you know, something about some new potential regulation or some new legal theory or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I always think, how can this impact my client? And so I would say that's one challenge, because in cyber, it's tough. There's so many different components. So staying really current, I think, is the number one challenge. And it's a very, very important thing for me to do. Number two is, you know, and I don't know if challenge is the right word, but, you know, I like to take the opportunity to do things like this, you know, to speak to people about these types of issues, kind of not to scare and terrify people, but just kind of, you know, put, you know, get the wheels turning a little bit and start thinking about some of these issues and ways to mitigate it. You know, do we want to cover something? Do we not want to cover something? How do we do that? So I guess those would be the main things. I know you asked for three. But those are the
just
those
sort of top, main things. Top things that you focus on. I guess sort of related to that, you know, is there any sort of, what kind of maybe cyber insurance related questions do you really like to ask about or talk about with kind of your peers?
Yeah, I always ask the same question. What are you seeing? What are you seeing out there? What do you think is coming? How are you dealing with this? What are the challenges, you know, that's being presented? You know, I'm a coverage lawyer, and so, you know, it can be easy for coverage lawyers to just like look at a claim, look at the words on a piece of paper and say covered, not covered. But that's not that helpful, because mm-hmm. I think you really have to know the dynamic of what everybody is dealing with in the situation. You know, everything from what is the market now? What is the market like in cyber now from a commercial point of view, from a market stability and viability point of view? What are the challenges of the underwriters? Like, we remember, Anthony, not too long ago, cyber used to be really much more difficult to sell. Mm-hmm. And then it became a little bit more difficult to buy starting a couple of years ago. And so I think it's important for me to really provide valuable advice to my clients to understand all of these dynamics that are happening now, including the commercial parts of cyber insurance, which are really key as the market is really growing. It's still a very small market compared with other types of insurance, but, you know, a sustainable, thriving cyber insurance market, I think, is really important for everybody. And so trying to keep those issues in mind. And again, as I've mentioned, probably an annoying amount of times on this podcast, I always try to keep in mind you know, the impact on the claims team as they're trying mm-hmm. to deal with all these different issues.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, you were talking about trying to keep up, and we've talked a few times in different different ways about that, whether it's talking to colleagues or, you know, waking up early. What would you say, you know, if you're looking at the news, looking at current events, what do you find interesting going on in cyber?
Yeah, I'm going to come back to my same question. You know, there's been so much focus on systemic events, which is really key. And, you know, the geopolitical implications on cyber insurance, you know, because of the conflicts that are going on and, you know, state-backed threat actor, you know, attacks and all that. But I think that's probably well covered. But I think this whole concept of, especially as we're becoming more and more digital, exposures generated by just what's seen as business practices now, like just because something is technically possible doesn't mean it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're seeing more and more of that and unfortunately turning into claims under insurance policy. So I think that's really interesting right now.
Okay. Well, we've kind of gone through, you know, the main thought leadership stuff I wanted to ask you about. We'd like to ask a few closing questions before we finish the interview. It's one of my favorite ones. How did you originally get into the industry?
To law or to insurance?
Either or both. Okay. I usually people answer with both.
You know, I guess it was kind of simultaneous. You know, when I started practicing law, I was working for a firm that did a lot of coverage work and had the good fortune to work a lot with literally the biggest name partner in that law firm and get a lot of good trial experience, first party and third party side, before anybody even heard of cyber insurance. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of got into it that way. And because the cases that I handled, coverage matters, were so big, they involved, you know, back in the day, lots of paper, you know, literally boxes and boxes of documents and warehouses of documents we would all go to. As that became electronic, you know, I started to kind of shift my focus to, you know, liabilities, exposures arising out of, you know, all this digitalization of information. Mm-hmm. And, went up to MIT, took a bunch of courses there on cyber issues, which is funny because I'm so not a techie. I can't even spell MIT, and and I'm up there taking these courses, but not to be a technologist, but just to issue spot. And so that's kind of how it happened. I just really worked hard to build that focus and expertise in cyber and privacy.
Okay. Interesting. So I can kind of see some elements there, but I'll ask this question anyways. What would you recommend to anyone who wants to be successful in insurance and or law?
Well, how about insurance law? How's that?
Sure. Or cyber insurance law, if we want to get really,
particular. Really know the basics of coverage, really understand how an insurance policy works, understand the difference legally between an insuring agreement versus a condition. What does it mean if a loss is not covered at, you know, it just never triggers coverage versus a loss is excluded by an exclusion in the policy? Understand all those fundamental insurance issues. Mm-hmm. And then just become as knowledgeable as you can about the exposures. Right now I'm doing a deep dive on AI, for example.
Yeah.
You know, trying to understand, you know, the potential impacts and benefits, frankly, that it might have for my clients. So it's a constant learning curve on cyber. And I wish there was a shortcut.
Yeah.
Follow people like you on LinkedIn, I would say, is a good thing to do to stay current, and things of that nature.
I think it's good to follow me because we have all these guests that I post quotes from. And it's not necessarily that I'm sharing anything, but I have to clarify that. I'm happy to have people follow our show. I try to tell everyone, if you want to learn about cyber insurance and the whole universe of it, definitely follow us.
100%. 100%. And then there's, some other great people that, will become known, very obvious as you're online. If you just look, if you just follow the guests that you've had on this podcast,
I think
it's a pretty good start.
It's true. It's been great for me learning from everyone, because I'm we're talking, right? But then I go back and we have the transcripts. And so I get to read the transcripts and I'm kind of going through it. And I feel like I know so much more now than I did a year and a half ago, it was almost 2 years ago we launched this thing. I mean, we kind of had a few months where it was a little bit, we were just kind of getting started, but yeah, it's been,
Because you've had a good, variety, good diversity of the people speaking. So you're getting on all different sides of the business. So it's really, really helpful.
That's exactly it. Like, I kind of knew my little area. But I think no matter how experienced somebody is, like, because we have so many perspectives from the entire insurance chain, I enjoy it, obviously, learning from everyone.
It's a public service. We're grateful for it.
So I guess just talking about, guests and things like that, do you have any thoughts on, is there someone you think I should invite? And why, if that comes to mind.
If you haven't had Alexandra from JKJ.
Yes.
Brett Schneider.
That is a reminder to me. I was just talking with her literally a couple days ago. If she watches this, she'll know when we recorded it. But I was just talking to her a couple days ago about it. So
she's super, super smart. Her background, cybersecurity is great, and very knowledgeable about insurance as well. Daniel Carr, who's really, on the cyber insurance side, great background in cybersecurity. He's at Ariel Re. He very innovative thinker about cyber insurance, and really smart guy.
Yeah. That's a good one. No, I haven't. I'm not sure why I haven't had him on. Yeah. We'll have to do that. Well, cool. Well, that was everything I wanted to ask. But thanks a lot for coming on the show. It's really been a pleasure.
Well, thanks for asking me. It was a pleasure to be on, and I love trying to share my perspective on these issues. I hope it's helpful. Before I do these things, I say, please let me be helpful and add value. People give up an hour of their time. You want it to be worthwhile. So hopefully we did that.
If you want to learn more about our host, Anthony, or his company, Aceris, visit aceris.com. aceris.com. Thanks to our friends at Savoo for producing this episode with us. See you next time.